Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith and the next voice you're going to hear is John Steele. John, what's going on?
Very little, Stuart, but I'm well, thank you. Yes, how are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. Well, you say very little's going on, but we've got a pretty kind of information-heavy pod coming up with from J1, J2, J3, and kind of everything and that kind of stuff in between. So are you ready?
Always.
There you go. That's yes. The answer I was expecting. So we'll look at the latest from the COVID-19 and its effect on Japanese football first. I think the first thing to say is that there are obviously there are a couple of Nagoya Grampus players who have tested positive for COVID-19. Mu Kanazaki was the first one. He tested positive, I think it was sometime just before the weekend. And then earlier this week, Australian goalkeeper Mitch Langerak also tested positive. This has got to be a worry, John, because all the J-League has formulated its plan and they've kind of put down their ideas about how they want the season to restart and to progress, but they must be looking at this Nagoya Grampus situation with some nervous eyes, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair comment. I suppose when the J-League was drawing up the restart plans and they took the decision to try and play all of the outstanding games, so, you know, a full season of J1, J2 and J3 fixtures, It must have come up in the meetings, in the discussions, that players were likely to test positive, you know, albeit in small numbers. So I guess it's something that they must have discussed, they must have thought about. But yeah, I think and this came up on the big pod, our kind of companion pod, the big pod this week with Sam Robson, saying that the way that the schedule has been set up. And we're still waiting on the full release of fixtures, aren't we? That's next Monday, June the 15th, that the kind of full schedule or new schedule comes out. There isn't, you know, trying to play the full set of fixtures in a compressed time period, it doesn't leave any wiggle room, really. If a team, I think my sort of nightmare scenario is if there is a cluster at a club like Nagoya, where it seems that, you know, it's possibly more than two players will test positive over time, if the club has to kind of go out of the fixture rotation for a couple of weeks, if you like, there isn't much space in the schedule where those games could be made up. And yeah, you might end up with a team, you know, having sort of four games in a week, not every week, but once at least to kind of make sure all the games are completed in time. And yeah, I think obviously we don't know what the future holds, especially this season, but I imagine there's a few panic phone calls have probably taken place over the last 7 days. So I think we probably should say, of course, we're kind of ignoring the health of the players a little bit here. So we hope, you know, the players are healthy and recover quite quickly. But yeah, just from the scheduling point of view, it's complex. Well, how do you see it, Stu?
Yeah, I feel exactly the same, and I think it's a highly ambitious project for the J-League. And also, along with the Asian Football Confederation partners, to think that they're going to be able to complete a full league season plus a full Asian Champions League season, and when you throw in a Levan Cup, a League Cup competition as well, I mean, the tension is it's too high, and I think that any more issues and coming into typhoon season, there's always the ever present threat of kind of natural disasters that come to Japan anyway. I just think that there isn't any wiggle room here, and like all the best laid plans can come astray if there's a cluster and a team has to be taken out of the fixtures, or if they have to delay any games or things like that. And so I think that the J1 boys did talk about this on the pod this week. I just think that there's obviously we have to the first thought is to the players. The players have to be safe. I know Kanazaki and Langerak tested positive. I don't know what kind of symptoms they had. I read that Kanazaki had a fever and that kind of stuff. Maybe I think I read that Langerak was asymptomatic, but that might have changed. I'm not really sure. But yeah, you've got to look after the players first. But also, I think something we did mention last week during the financial pod was that, you know, teams are banking on the income from a full season. And so, not to harp back to that, but a lot of the money they get, I assume this is the case in J1 as well, but like J2 and J3 teams, a lot of the money they get from sponsorship is paid at the start of the year. And so they can use that money to kind of strengthen their team or strengthen their backroom staff or whatever. And so if they end up having to refund money that they've already spent, that's going to cause a huge issue. So I think there's a huge financial aspect to this as well. The competition angle as well, I suppose you want all the games played fairly and that kind of stuff. But I think it's a bit too ambitious, and I don't know whether we're going to see a full season, but we'll just have to cross our fingers and see, I think, John. Well, we were going to talk about this later on, but we've come on to the fixtures, so we might as well head on to this part. So the J2 and J3 opening league fixtures were leaked this week to Nikkan Sports, I think it was first, or Sportnichi, one of the sports newspapers here anyway. And so the opening fixtures for J2 and J3, John, I think they've been done kind of geographically, which is how we thought they would be. And they've come up with a pretty decent opening slate of fixtures, right? There's some good games that are scheduled to be first up on the restart list for J2. Just some of the highlights looking at it. You've got Jeff United hosting Omiya. You've got Tokyo Verdy hosting Machida. You've got Kyoto hosting Jubilo Iwata. What else you got? Shikoku Derby between Ehime and Tokushima. You've got, where's the other one that struck me? Yeah, Kofu and Niigata. There's some really good games on that opening slate of J2 fixtures, isn't there?
Yeah, I think this is probably a taste of things to come, certainly for the first kind of block of new fixtures. I think the regionalised aspect is due to be around until, is it mid-August possibly, or even the end of August? So I think we can expect sort of... yeah, pretty non-stop kind of derby or near derby action for the first few rounds. I think I do feel a bit conflicted. There's just so many games that would be attractive to go to, which obviously is not an option right now, or games where it will be nice to see the stadium full. In fact, in my sort of sleep-deprived dad state, I just was looking at the Kyoto versus Iwata game, and thinking that the stadium will be a really good spectacle. And then, the part of my brain that was half asleep kicked in and said, no, John, it's going to be empty. And I was like, oh, yes. So it won't quite be as good. So yeah, it is bittersweet, I think. But it's nice to actually be talking about fixtures, I think, for a change. You've got Verdy, Tokyo Verdy hosting Machida as well, the, in inverted commas, Tokyo Classic, which is always good when that comes around, and to see the clubs... try and pump up the marketing on it. I think it's just nice to have a set of fixtures to look at. But I do think, and we'll probably talk about that with J3 as well, the Gifu versus Imabari game, for example, on the opening day slate there. And it's like they're all games that you'd want to go to, or at least when you see the highlights on TV, you'd look forward to seeing a full or nearly full stadium. And it's a shame that won't be the case, but we're playing with the cards that we've been dealt at the moment, Stu.
Yeah, we are, and I think it was always going to be like this. I think as soon as games were A, localized, and B, played behind closed doors, I think we're always going to see something like these are the games that we would like to go to, or that would be good spectacles to look at on TV, because stadiums would be full, and especially like Jeff United versus Almir, the colour would have been kind of amazing. Mm. I feel slightly kind of sad for a team like Kanazawa, because they open against Matsumoto Yamaga at home, and I think that probably would have been their highest gate of the year, I would have assumed. Matsumoto's not that far from Kanazawa. I think maybe Niigata will also bring a lot of fans, but I think it deprives certain clubs of some much needed money. But I think you're right that playing the cards that they were dealt. And I think if we look in J3 again, they've gone localized. So you've got some derby games on the slate here. You've got Iwate versus Akita and Hachinohe against Fukushima from Tohoku. You've got Sagamihara versus YS Yokohama, Toyama versus Nagano, Shizuoka, so Numazu versus Fujieda. There's a lot of there's a lot of local derbies. In fact, I think the teams with the furthest to travel is actually Imabari, because they go to Gifu on the first day of the year. One thing we should talk about, John, before we get onto the fixtures in J3, is that there's no Tokyo under-23 team in J3 this year. News came out over the weekend that FC Tokyo are pulling their under-23 teams due to a lack of available stadia in the Tokyo area. I know the Right Reverend Alex Bishop talked about this on the Big Pod this week, saying that kind of women's teams in the Tokyo area got priority on the stadium, and also Musashino, I think, said they had priority on one of FC Tokyo under-23 stadiums. I think most people who are listening to this will kind of already be telegraphing what I'm going to say, but I don't really care about Tokyo leaving the league. And I actually think that the Osaka teams should have been removed from this league as well. They're going to be finishing this year anyway, and they're not playing for anything. They in this particular scenario, they are just creating more problems. I think once Tokyo left, I think Gamba and Cerezo should have said, okay, we'll take our teams out of this, and that means there'll be less games to fit in a shortened space of time. I know people might disagree with me on that, but I think if ever there is a time to do it, it would be this time. But what do you think, John? Tokyo under-23s are out, so what do you think?
I'm happy about this, to be honest. And I think I've never really agreed with having the under-23 teams in J3 in the first place, because it kind of makes it seem like it's not a fully professional league, if you like. To me, that's my personal opinion. And I know that it happens in some other countries, like in Spain, some teams have a B team that plays in the sometimes I think even as high up as the second division, although I'm pulling that out of thin air. But I've never really been a big fan of that. I think it's one of the things that is a mistake that's sometimes made in Japan in general. And I think you see it in the J-League sometimes, importing things from other countries just because other countries do them, without actually thinking if it makes sense, if it's viable, and if it's going to bring fans in. I think... The attendances for the under-23 games in general have shown that there's not really much appetite or market for them. Although I think, ironically, FC Tokyo probably did the best out of the three in terms of attendances and generating revenue extra revenue for FC Tokyo. I think we do see some weird with this kind of COVID-19 sort of all the issues that have been generated with the J League, it is interesting sometimes to look at what, I mean, I think we've said before, and we'll probably say a few more times this season, you know, Mitsuru Murai, the chairman, and the people in charge of been working pretty hard and doing a good job in general, I think, of trying to kind of get a season together that will work. But it is interesting to see what seems to be non-negotiable or what's not up for grabs. So, for example, we talked about it off air before we started doing, like, the Lovan Cup, for example. I mean, I assume, or I guess I know without asking, that I think there's obviously sponsorship money attached to that. That means that there has to be a Lovan Cup. Excuse me, even though it kind of doesn't make sense schedule wise at the moment. But yeah, I wonder with these under 23 teams, I don't think that's the case. You know, nobody stands to lose a great deal of money, do they, if the under 23s don't take part? And I'm not sure if it was my league, and this might be why I don't run a professional sports league, but I'm not sure I would have left the decision up to the clubs. I think I probably would have phoned round and just said, yeah, sorry, but you know, we invited you to come in and play. I mean, they were never promoted into J3, for example. And I think that invitation could have been rescinded. The only thing I can think of is maybe Gamba and Cerezo possibly have contracted players specifically, or have contracts with players specifically with the J3 fixtures in mind, and it might have left them up the creek short of paddles if they hadn't actually had games to play them in, or that there might have been some legal problems tied up with that. But then again, I think that must have been the case for FC Tokyo as well. So, yeah, it's a strange one, and I don't understand it. But then again, I mean, I've never really understood having the under 23 teams in there in the first place. I could kind of understand it maybe as a one-off experiment. Yeah, I've always thought it would have made sense just to have the under 23 teams in a league of their own, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense, like a localized, or same as what they're doing now. So you block teams together geographically. There's no reason why Gamba, Kyoto, Cerezo, Kobe, Tokushima, Hiroshima, like those kind of teams in Western Japan, like why can't they have their own kind of under 23 league? Like
I mean, it's often discussed in the context, you know, in sort of a post coronavirus world. If we just talk about, you know, UK football for a second, English football, I mean, people are always talking about the lower leagues in England potentially being regionalised for all kinds of reasons. And I'm not saying I'm in favour or against, but you know, I think in J3 it wouldn't hurt to have that conversation, even for the senior teams like J3 as it is now. So it would definitely make sense for under 23 teams to have some kind of regionalised competition. And just looking at the players that these three under 23 sides have produced, and which is again is kind of stealing topics from the big pod here, but I'm not sure if they will be missed necessarily, if that makes any sense. I mean, I think it'll be an interesting footnote in J League history down the line, but I think we could have got just as many potential superstars from having these teams play against each other in their own regional under 23 league. I don't think anybody playing against J3 sides hasn't unearthed masses of potential players that would not have been unearthed anyway.
I completely agree with that. We'll wait and see if Gamba and Cerezo kind of continuing on, continue with their fixtures as well. We'll see. Yeah, and so we're going to move on to a couple of kind of supporter theme topics now. I think we need to start off with something that seems an awful long time ago now, John. But back in February, Kyoto, a Kyoto Sanga supporter held up a flag with what looked like a Nazi imagery on it. And it was investigated by the club and by the league, and actually judgment was passed this week, and they Kyoto have been fined ¥1 million, and they have been not praised by the J League, but the J League said that they acted swiftly and that they acted to seek out the supporter and to put in some kind of safeguards that they're going to check banners and flags and that kind of stuff in the future. Considering some of the other more kind of high profile punishments that have been handed out for, shall we say, similar acts of discrimination or discriminatory imagery or whatever you want to call it. Obviously Gamba, I'm thinking about Urawa as well. Kyoto Sanga get a 1 million yen fine. What do you think, John?
I think it's right that the club was seen to be punished for this, because it wasn't acceptable. I think in the past we've talked about like giving people the benefit of the doubt of it, there is just a possibility that the guy isn't sort of raving neo-Nazi but just thought it looked cool. And I know that people listening might think, you know, John's off base with this, and I'm not saying that's my opinion, but I'm just saying in Japan, more than many other countries, especially in Europe, and it rightly or wrongly, and I think for me obviously wrongly, but that is a legitimate thing. I mean, we do have periodically, like once every 5 years, some kind of teen idol pop band ends up doing a music video in Nazi uniforms on TV here.
Yes,
you know, it becomes a thing, and we should mention. And I'm off topic. I'm rowing furiously to get back on. But you know, even this weekend, HK, which is a state broadcaster here, has been embroiled in a pretty big scandal about a kind of anime style report they did on the protests in America right now, which didn't exactly portray black people, you know, in the right way, shall we say, and then move on quickly. So I think it was important for the league and for integrity's sake that Kyoto had a punishment. I'm one of these people where the amount of money involved always confuses me, because I can never remember the amounts of fines that have been dished out previously. And what I always remember is the UEFA one, where I think Manchester City got fined a huge amount because they were late coming back from half time once. But the same season, UEFA handed out a lot of really small punishments for like racist chanting and things against other teams.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what, you know, a common discussion point is like, what amount should clubs be fined? And I don't know really is the honest answer, but they should be fined something. There should be some punishment either behind closed doors, as it was in Urawa's case, for a game, or a monetary fine. And hopefully that provides the necessary sort of performance art, if you like, to let this be closed and for everybody to move on. I think what it does highlight in the kind of the tweets that I read, most of the tweets that I read on this were Dan Olowitz's tweets, of course, who's doing a great job of covering this when it happened in February and again this week. I think it's the case that probably there were some protocol mistakes, where the J-League has always asked clubs to kind of self-police these banners, so like club officials should check the banners and make sure that everything's okay. And I think there's obviously been a failure of that in this case, and I think that is something that can be eradicated in the future. You know, banners should be cleared with the club. Maybe you have like a permit system or a registration or something, you know, I don't know. But I think most, if not all, J-League clubs have like a fan liaison officer or more than one. And supporter culture is one of the things in the J-League that, you know, has been around since the J-League started. So, you know, I think when banners and fans, I mean, we've been watching lots of classic J-League on DAZN over the past few months, and banners and flags are not a new occurrence. But, yeah, I think obviously there's been clubs themselves have maybe been lax on this or made lip service to the rules without following them very closely. And I think that is something that needs to change. And I think maybe perhaps this exists already and I've never seen it, but the J-League should have a more detailed kind of code or guide for what is acceptable and what isn't, so that we don't have... You know, I think we need it in black and white. Like, this is, if this happens, this is the punishment that you get. You know, because if you think about it, it's quite a long lead time, isn't it, from February to June to get the decision on this. I think it, perhaps with clearer rules or better enforcement of the rules as they are now, it could be more of an open and shut case.
I think that's right. It's possible that it was kind of lax, because I think it happened at the opening of Kyoto Sanga's new stadium, right? I think it was the flag was flown for the opening game when they hosted Cerezo for the grand opening. Preseason friendly, and maybe security wasn't as tight, or maybe the functioning of the kind of the people that would look into this, though, like fan liaison officers, like you said, maybe that wasn't kind of as up and running as it should have been. I feel the same as you, actually. I can't quite think of a good answer of what is enough of a fine for something like this.
I think the listeners can tweet at us and let us know, I guess. But yeah, for me, I've always found it really hard to work it out.
It is difficult. Like, and I wonder if it is possible to have a one size kind of fits all approach. It. There should definitely be some kind of legal kind of guidelines. Like, you can't use, don't know, like stormtrooper insignia or any kind of Nazi, any kind of Nazi imagery or that kind of stuff. You know, it takes you back to the Butchikurase, when was it Giravance Kitakyushu Okayama? One of those teams kind of put that, I think it was Giravance, put that.
Yes,
on one
I think
their...
in a sort of Kitakyushu dialect, it means to knock somebody out, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then that was taken down because the staff at Giravance Kitakyushu hadn't approved it, and they thought it was too strong, and maybe they'd gotten some complaints from other supporters, because it was like violent imagery or violent kind of words or whatever. So I think that it's, and obviously, like with some other high profile banners that have been put up in stadiums before, we've had issues surrounding this for a while now, and I think that it would be a good idea for the J League, once they've got a little bit of free time to devote to something other than playing an ungodly amount of games in a short space of time, I think they'd be well to kind of publicize the guidelines for flags and the punishments contained if teams are known to have violated that.
I think the J League probably needs to take the lead on this and have like basically some kind of directory of what is acceptable and what isn't. I think so. I mean, when it comes to kind of Nazi related imagery, I think there are plenty of internationally kind of available resources that will tell you what you should be able to see in football stadiums and what you shouldn't. I think probably one of the reasons why the J League is reluctant to do this, or hasn't opposed it, it's obvious that the Imperial, the Japanese Imperial Navy flag is probably going to come up at some point.
That was something I was thinking about saying. I think it's...
Yeah, I've gone there.
Yeah, well, you did. at J2 Kanto Bites, everyone.
There. Oh, my gosh.
Because I'm pretty sure Kyoto have one of those as well.
The thing is, many clubs do.
You're quite right, do. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, whether that's okay or not, again, I think the J League is going to have to get into this, but it's probably doing everything it can not to wade in, not to get involved. So I think they would rather have the clubs police it themselves. But I think as long as they have that kind of let the clubs take care of it themselves policy, that's just going to lead to inconsistency, because there's 56 clubs, you know.
I think they want some kind of plausible deniability. Like, I think they want the clubs to be the fall guy. I think if the clubs decide what is appropriate and what's inappropriate, then I think the J League can say, look, we're leaving it to clubs, you know.
I think that's fine, but then that kind of guarantees that this kind of thing is going to come up again in the future, I think, and then we're going to get into the argument of, at the moment, I mean, maybe the Kyoto guy is a paid up neo-Nazi. I don't know. But the problem is, if you can say, I didn't know it was wrong, I don't know what the flag means, and there isn't any J League official guide to point to say, yes, you do know it's wrong because you've seen this guide, how can we know what the right punishment is for the club? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there should be a different punishment. I don't think we should have the same punishment for clubs. Like in some clubs in Italy, for example, and Eastern Europe, where the club probably knowingly has neo-Nazi elements among the fans,
yes,
and looks the other way. You know, that there should be a very heavy punishment for that, in my opinion, but it shouldn't be the same punishment as like one idiot. Do you know what I mean? That might be probably an unfashionable, maybe unpopular view. I'm not trying to upset or offend anybody who thinks differently. It's just I like these things to be central. I mean, you know, red cards and yellow cards on the pitch are reviewed, aren't they, centrally, you know, by some kind of committee or body. I think maybe the rules for flags and banners in stadiums should probably have a kind of, there should be an authoritative source you can go to, and it should come from the J League. I don't think it should be, oh well, we've gone to FIFA's one, or this is what such and such website says about this flag. I think the J League has to say, this and this are examples of what's okay. This and this example is not okay. If you're not sure, if you're the fan liaison officer, you're the club, you're not sure, you come to us, you clear it with us first. And that's what we can see in the stadium. If it's not in the stadium, if we see things that are not on this list in the stadium and you haven't queried it with us, then you get this much fine for a first offence, you know, kind of thing. No excuses. That might be a good way of doing it. I do remember now, and I'd completely forgotten this, but when I went to the first Chibegin Cup game after the Chapecoense air disaster, when Kempes, the former Jeff Stryker, had died, along with many Chapecoense players. And there was a near riot because the Jeff fans in the away end at Hitachidai had a big Obrigado Kempes banner, and the security staff wanted them to take it down, and it obviously, for obvious reasons, that caused a bit of an incident. But the issue was, and I can't remember exactly what, but there was something wrong with the format of the flag. I think it was like held up with poles,
right,
which is not okay in that part of the ground. I think that was what it was, or it was either that, or it was the opposite. It didn't have poles, and it should have had, or it had poles. I don't know, but obviously fans got the idea that the message on the flag was not okay, and that caused that. That's not an easy thing to trans. That kind of thing's not easy to transmit to like 1,000 people at once.
No,
it's in a noisy stadium. So yeah, in that case, it was a question of you know, it was like you've tried to download a PDF instead of a Word document sort of issue. Not the content, not what was in the document that was the issue. But yeah, so I think again on that, I mean, you must have noticed this when you go to stadiums, it's like different rules for like taking in like a plastic bottle, for example.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Some grounds will be like, what are you doing? That's a plastic bottle. Give it here. And other state, I've been to grounds where I've prepared my plastic bottles to show them, and they're like, oh, what are you doing? Walk straight in, take as many as you need. And you're like, oh, okay. But they're both J League games at J League grounds, you know. So maybe we just need more of a standardization across the board. That could be things like drinks. It could be what you can bring in and what you can't. And it probably should include logos on banners. I guess. What was the question?
I think you were just typing in your LinkedIn description for your job application for the J League. Pen pusher wanted, will make red tape your friend, or something like that.
I just think, like, I mean, I guess my frustration comes from the fact that I feel like we've discussed, for however many years we've been doing, we've discussed a story along these lines like once every 3 years, I feel like, with sort of like clockwork regularity. So if I was working for the J League, I'd be like, if I was a press officer for the J League in charge of flag news, I'd be like, I'm really sick of having this conversation every 3 years. Can we not get
can
a better?
Can we do something about it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, our final bit of business actually leads on from that, because we just talked about banners, but banners, apparently, again, according to Dan Orlovitz, who I'd like to echo your thoughts. He's done a sterling job reporting on the return of the J League and the process that is going to take. Dan reported that fans won't be allowed to give banners to club staff for them to put up in the stadia. The J League is apparently concerned about the possible hygiene of the banners and whether they've been disinfected thoroughly enough, and they want to limit the interaction between supporters and club staff. So something that I thought would be kind of more than okay to do is apparently not okay to do. So we won't be seeing any banners, but we might be seeing cardboard supporters, because teams like Sagan Tosu and Albirex Niigata are doing it. I'm sure there are other teams as well that have got this in the pipeline. They're gonna allow supporters to pay for a print of the supporters to be put on seats in the stadium. And so banners, yes. Cardboard. Banners, no. Cardboard, yes. What do you think, John?
It's tricky. I was thinking like a good tabloid style sort of wrong spin headline would be like, your club thinks you're dirty or something. But obviously that's not the case here. And I think it is hygiene related. I think another aspect might just be it's from the club's point of view, I think it would kind of be a pain in the ass. That's one thing I was thinking. Well, I don't know. I mean, again, we're running into this kind of, you only need one sort of banner with the wrong thing on it, and then you're in trouble again. I mean, I'm thinking about the sex dolls at the K-League sure. game here, yep. kind of level. So I think maybe you're kind of rolling the dice in a way that doesn't need to be rolled to some extent. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it could be done. I think the reality might be that some clubs have got the capacity or the facility to do it, and maybe there are some that don't.
Sure. Mm.
Or perhaps some that don't want to. And in the interests of a united front on this, the J-League's probably said, well, if 40% of clubs have got concerns about this, then maybe we'll just make it a rule that, you know, nobody can. But yeah, I'm not sure why they can't open a section of the stadium, have fans come in. I mean, I understand there's an issue of like transmission when people touch the banners, but as long as the owner of the banners bring them and put them up and then take them away, I would think it would be fine. I think this is probably something which is like overly cautious to me. And I have a feeling it might be relaxed. What might have informed this decision to some extent, though, is I have read tweets this week saying that the league, the J League, is still hoping / planning to have fans back in the stadium pretty soon, right?
July 11th? Was that the date?
So they're literally only going to have, I mean, if that holds, I mean, of course we're talking reduced capacity, 5,000 max, aren't we? You know, but that would mean, I'm not good at math, but that would only be one round of J1 behind closed doors, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be,
fans can come in. So I think, I wonder if it turns out that we have to be behind closed doors for longer, I wonder if the league might look at this again.
But just the short termism means it's a price worth paying if fans are ultimately going to be allowed back in 2 weeks later anyway.
I mean we were joking earlier about the J League being, you know, having not much free time at the moment. Perhaps it's just one of these things where they're like, yeah, put a pin in that one and we'll come back to that when we've actually got games. You know, I don't know. I agree with you. I assumed, because when this story originally came out, it was basically this is an idea that's going to be fine. So I think it kind of took me a little bit. I was a bit taken aback when I read that it's not going to be fine for fans banners to come in. I mean, if you're being very cynical, you might say perhaps the clubs think there's a revenue stream to be had of, you know, selling cardboard cutouts and things, or downloads of the cheering app that we talked about last time, developed by Yamaha, for example. But I think the reality is it's probably just not a priority at the moment.
It seems like if you think about it from a club staff point of view, There must be 1,001 other things that are on their mind. And then
I think, yeah, it might be worth mentioning as well, and we've talked about this ad nauseum really, but you know, most, you get to low levels, clubs don't own the stadiums. I wonder if there's an imperative on a match day now just to get in and get out, at least initially, you know, so the place can be disinfected or checked or whatever it is that needs to be done. But I know we've had this discussion before about Gifu, haven't we, about how sometimes they can't even use the stadium until 2 hours before the kickoff, you know, on a match, depending on what time beforehand. So I wonder if there's just a case of, like, the priority is just getting the games on, isn't it, initially?
I think, yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I just think that, yeah, something that I probably skirted over when I thought about this, but I would, yeah, you'd probably, if you didn't own your own stadium, you wouldn't want to be liable for anything kind of untoward that happened on your watch, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I would prefer fans to have the chance to, I don't know, post their banners or, you know, leave their banners outside, then club staff come and hang them up. But I can't see the J-League's point of view on the Levan Cup and the under-23 teams in J3, but I can see where they're coming from on this. Of like, if I was Mr. Mirai and I listened to a one-hour presentation, like, yeah, that all sounds fine, talk to me in 2 weeks kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's just see. Let's just get through the first, let's get some games on TV and then we'll see. But yeah, I was a bit surprised because when that was initially announced, it sounded like, oh yeah, good idea, everyone, you know, everyone's a winner kind of thing. But I'm sure it will, if it turns out that we're going to be behind closed doors for a significant length of time, I think they'll find a way around that. I think they'll look at that again.
And there we go. We finish on a positive note, John. Yeah, thank you to all the listeners, and a big thanks to the Patreons as well. I hope all you Patreons enjoyed your J2 financial data set that you found waiting for you when you downloaded your podcast on Patreon. Next week, or in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a J3, what John called a data dump, next time. There'll be a J3 financial podcast, and there'll be a J3 financial document making its way to the Patreons as well. But yeah, I'd just like to thank basically everyone for their support, and we hope everyone's staying safe and staying washing their hands and gargling on and doing whatever and to stay well. John, if people want to kind of come at you with some contrarian opinions, where can they do that?
I feel less confident about saying this than usual after the topics we've been through. Yeah, at J2CantoBytes on Twitter for me. If I need help with my views on the fine system in the J League, yeah, please help me out. And how about you, Stu?
Yeah, I'm at Sushi_football. And I will say to all the people, look, if you want to have a go at John, you got to come through me first. So I'm with you, John. Don't worry, I got you.
Yeah, we're turning into shock jocks here. We need the games back as soon as possible.
It was so serene and data driven last week. We got to get back on that kind of.
I think this is like a knee jerk reaction to last week, isn't it? Like we were too we were constrained by stats last week.
Yeah, we're finding our equilibrium.
Okay. I hope listeners cut us some slack this week.
There you go. Once again, thank you to everyone who listens. Check out the Big Pod as well this week with Sam, Ben, and Alex Bishop. And in the meantime, we hope that you stay safe, and we look forward to speaking with you again next week. But until then, goodbye for now.